How Bourne taught me not to teach him. My parents took me to a fancy restaurant when I was 12, as a reward for good grades, in our final sanctuary before the end. We had come to that city almost miraculous out of a landscape of lawlessness, fleeing a mad dictator who had taken to cannibalism and random amputations. We had made it through the outer fortifications and barricades, the quarantine of endless questions, because they needed teachers and doctors, and for 18 months, our new home had provided a measure of stability. My mother had a job as a nurse in a clinic, and my father used his skills working for a builder. The restaurant had spotless silverware and bone-white napkins, and a server who started each sentence with sir or madam. They even had hot towels and china finger bowls so you could wash your hands between courses. The walls projected images of the most calming and peaceful nature, from a rippling surf at the edge of a black sand beach to a mountain view of a forested valley so fresh and clear you could almost feel the wind. Little biotech creatures that looked like fluffy baby birds, mixed with adorable hamsters, gambolled and chittered and put on shows on the wide window frame. Through the window, past the cute biotech, an ordinary evening scene, with street lamps, a paved avenue, and even a few cars grumbling along. My mother loved the biotech, wondered where it came from. Something so advanced had to come from a place that had security, that could feed and house people. Biotech, she had come to believe, created a trail, became a kind of clue as to where might be safe. This was just as things began to fall apart in that city, too, so the question of safety was on our minds. Even as everyone was trying to ignore the situation, by attending with ever more vigilance to the finer things in life, I still was going to school, for the first time in ages. I worked hard for good grades. I was treated with no more than the average distrust of strangers. I fit in just enough to avoid most teasing about my frizzy hair and odd accent. What teasing I got came with a good-natured smile because so many children in the schools had come from somewhere else, too. I was proud of my effort. I was proud that I'd managed to adjust, to make my mind leave behind the horrors we had experienced before reaching that place. My parents gave me a present, a biology book with foldouts showing cross-sections of different environments drawn in detail and in vivid but realistic colors. Jungles came wreathed in vines, with tiny monkeys with huge eyes and poison frogs and ridiculously fancy birds. Deserts came with burrows under the sand that held solemn-looking mice, and above them scaly monsters with flickering tongues and vistas broken by gnarled cactus. It looked new, but I knew my mother had been hoarding it for more than a year, wrapped in a brown paper bag. I'd snuck short reeds a few times when my parents were asleep. I didn't know they'd meant it for me. The food, when it finally came, was so perfect. It melted on the tongue. The meat like butter, the vegetables cooked just right, the bread rustic and silky inside the wonderfully burnt crust. Dessert was heavier, a sweet and tangy and spongy tower of something with vanilla ice cream alongside. For dessert, too, the pratfalling biotech came tumbling off the windowsill and did a little dance around my dessert while singing, "Congratulations!" I looked at these two creatures with delight. But a year earlier, in the wilderness, we would have caught them, cooked them, and eaten them. By the time we left and walked home, my parents were agreeably drunk, and we sat in the living room talking and laughing until midnight. I had no idea that I would someday lose them, that I would become a scavenger in a nameless city, that I would have dreams of drowning, that I would be a parent to pratfalling biotech that talked back, that challenged and pushed me in so many ways. I often wished we had just stayed home, skipped the restaurant because in memory, the meal overpowers the evening afterward. No matter how hard I try, I can't remember what I said to my parents or what they said to me. Yet I can still remember the taste of the ice cream.
"The world is so big, Rachel," Bourne had said to me on the way back to the balcony cliffs after we left the rooftop. "It just keeps going and going."
"It ends eventually." I almost said, "It gets smaller," but bit my tongue. I didn't know if my world was getting bigger again after Wick's revelations. I didn't know which direction was down and which was up. But I did know I had broken my word to Bourne that night and gone through a miserable day pining for him and putting up with a lightness to Wick's step, even a whistle at times that I resented, attributed to his happiness that Bourne was gone, and blunted my sympathy for Wick's condition. I don't know where Bourne went the day he was missing or in what disguise. I don't know if it even matters other than the stress it put on me, a mother's worry, or if that was the moment of inattention, that caused all of the rest to go off course. All I know is he came back safe and greeted me like nothing had happened and he had just stepped out for an hour. But I wanted to make it up to Bourne, and I wanted to do it by teaching him things more formally, so that he would know what stars were and what the sun was, the way my parents used to teach me, even when there was no school, no dinner, no fancy restaurant. Because I still had what they had given me, rituals, values, knowledge, their way of preparing me for a hopeful future. I'd lost all my possessions when I came to the city, but in my scavenging, I'd found another biology book. It didn't have foldouts and there were fewer illustrations, but some of the art reminded me of the book I'd loved. I thought I'd give it to Bourne, along with books on other topics, but the other books were camouflage, really, for what was personal to me. Bourne had locked the door of his new apartment, but why I tried to turn the knob rather than knock first, I don't know. Maybe because it seemed to have no biotech defending it. When I did knock, Bourne didn't answer right away, and I thought maybe he was out, and I had a startled moment imagining him back out in the city before I heard a muffled, "Coming," and "I'll be right with you." And then the door swung open, and he hustled me in with a curling tentacle, and him so familiar to me I didn't mind the strength around my waist, reeling me in. So there I was in his apartment, a place he'd made himself, me clutching my books and trying to fend off images conjured up by Wick's words two nights ago. It was a single room, very large though, as if he'd torn out a dividing wall. Even if I could see no evidence of such destruction, I smelled fresh paint, though that was nearly impossible, and an underlying scent of lilac that he had no doubt wanted to be the overlying scent. "Sit down," he said. "Sit down." But he had no furniture, just an empty space, a bare floor, a huge globe of the world in one corner, like you used to find in old libraries, and a closet in the other corner, a cache of little plastic children's records spilling out from under it. He played them by forming a needle from his cilia and rotating the record. I could never hear anything, but apparently he did. I sat on a stool made of him, and between us was a carpet made of him that felt like the underneath of a bath mat, with a turret of him facing me so I'd feel comfortable. The turret wore a huge smile and had a big, goofy blue eye right on the top of it. Although I had come to educate him, I also wished I could help him decorate his apartment, because the only things on the walls were the three dead astronauts we'd happened across our first time out, hanging from hooks. The sight got our conversation off on the wrong foot. It made me cold all over, seeing those dead skull faces through the smashed glass, as if Bourne had brought something deadly into our home. What are those doing there, Bourne? They did loll, they did sag, the faces looking down at the floor. Those were three dead bodies on the wall, three skeleton corpses. Oh, the dead astronauts? The fox said I needed to jazz up the place. I needed to give it some pizzazz, some oomph. I was rendered speechless by so many parts of what he'd said. Foxes, dead astronauts, least of all, jazz, pizzazz, oomph. Three words he never should have used outside of the books he found them in, but that wasn't the point. They're not dead astronauts. The fox told you what? Never mind, Bourne said. It was a joke. I was joking. Now, what did you come over for? How can I help you? How can I help you? Those are three dead skeletons on the wall, Bourne. Yes, Rachel. I took them from the crossroads. I thought they would look nice in here. Gaping, gaunt, one torn suit for each of us. When had he taken them? What traps had he set off, and how had he survived them? They're dead people, Bourne. I know. They're definitely not living in there anymore. The dead astronauts have gone away. There's nothing to read in them. The big eye in the turret had gotten small, intensely focused, growing out on the end of a delicate tendril to wander and wisp in front of me. I could have reached out and patted Bourne on the eyeball if I'd wanted to. It's ghoulish, I said.
Ghoulish, he said, savoring, making it sound like goulash. You mean like ghosts? Like being haunted?
No.
I promise you, there's no one here, Bourne said, touching the suits, making them rock a little in their harnesses. Have I done something wrong, Rachel?
I tried to adjust to the dead astronauts on the wall. Bourne would not stop calling them dead astronauts, which means I must have called them that around him, and so their history was set. But the straight-up unimportant truth was that it irritated me that Bourne had moved the dead astronauts to decorate his apartment, because that meant the intersection would be so much harder to identify next time. No, you haven't done anything wrong, but I know that some people might be offended by you hanging dead people on the wall. As if the balcony cliffs was full of other tenants.
They look peaceful to me, Rachel. They seemed lonely. I think someone had put them at the crossroads, Rachel. I think some bad people had put them there. Now I have rescued them. Now they're safe, I think.
Safe and still dead. Bourne, I hate to ask, but can you promise me you'll put them away, at least? In the closet?
The closet is full.
But something he read in the expression on my face made him volunteer to get rid of the astronauts, so he added,
I'm sure I can find something better.
I didn't inquire as to what better meant, and he never did remove the dead astronauts. I could give Bourne no semblance of a standard education because we had only what I could find in the balcony cliffs, because who would risk salvage time to bring back books? So I showed him the biology text. I lied and told him that I had gotten it from my parents, and I wanted him to have it, that maybe we could go through the book together. The tendril had withdrawn, and the big eye floated above the big smile once more. Bourne was a kind of sibilant blue-green, seemed almost to reflect the waves of a sea he'd never seen, as if the water and surf were washing over him.
That's kind, Rachel, Bourne said. I do appreciate it so much. But I've already read all of the books in the Balcony Cliffs. I've read them all, and I think that might be enough for me to have read, rather than to have lived.
I don't see much of a library in here. A vaguely hurt comment, because I felt wrong-footed once more. I had already promised myself I wouldn't ask him where he'd disappeared to, that to do so was somehow dangerous. But I felt a distance between us I associated with the intermittent beacon that was Wick, not me and Bourne. Not the me and Bourne that had run up and down the hallways of the Balcony Cliffs when I'd been recovering.
Oh, the stacks and stacks and stacks! No one needs the clutter, so many things to trip over. I have remembered it all. I read it all. I read everything.
I tried to think like Bourne then. A very large invertebrate, only getting larger, who needed room to stretch out, with skin that was more intelligent than mine. He wasn't human, even if he was a person. He didn't need what we needed, which is why he had no furniture. Had it caused him mental anguish to be around so much clutter in my apartment? But you must have questions. I meant in general. But Bourne merrily launched into specific questions.
Oh yes, questions. How long have humans lived on this planet? And what have they accomplished? I can't tell. You mentioned ghosts before. Do you believe in ghosts? Do you know if there is still a spaceship somewhere on Earth? There must be a spaceship somewhere, or two or three. Do you ever feel haunted? Do you ever find anything spooky? Who are we? And who are them? Did human beings ever colonize any other planets? How many human beings are still alive on Earth?
Those are a lot of questions, Bourne, I said. I wasn't sure which to answer first or what my answers might be. The books I'd brought him were of little help, not appropriate for what Bourne needed or needed from me.
I've been haunted by them.
Hauntings came up a lot with Bourne once he wasn't a child any longer. I would come to realize a haunting meant something different to him. The landscapes he traversed looked nothing like what I saw. Might to me seem like a bombardment of senses I couldn't even imagine.
Who?
Bourne swiveled his turret toward the dead men on the wall, shone a mist-like magenta light upon them.
Them. But not as ghosts. I see it, I taste it. All the contamination, the low-level radiation, the storage sites, the runoff, every place is sick. There's sick everywhere. I estimate I expend 18 lizards a day keeping it off of me. It makes me be sure of myself every moment and keep track of myself.
I had looked forward to having adult conversations with Bourne, and now I didn't want them. I didn't even quite understand what conversation we were having, and I didn't want to be reminded of the ways my body was being tested every day in the city. But I tried twice more. First, I shared a schedule I had come up with, a schedule that, day by day, turned from one subject to the next. Basic math, language arts, hard science, soft science. It even included music and philosophy. Bourne examined the piece of paper in his nub of a pseudopod. He hadn't even done me the courtesy of extending a full tentacle, but made me get up and hand it to him. Bourne said.
Humph!
Outsize, hammy acting, satirical sounds. He also hadn't made any effort to appear to be reading the sheet, but I knew he had. This was Bourne being rude on purpose. What's wrong?
Bourne plays the piano, Bourne dances, Bourne sings, Bourne recites poetry. Is that what you want? While I'm doing other more important things, I guess part of me could do that for you. I guess I could find a way if it's something you want.
Said in a flat, irritated tone that must have been as much an attempt at learning the inflections of my language as the words themselves. But it's for you. It's something for you so you can learn. Not for me, never for me. Not even for the memory of a schoolgirl in a far distant city, in music class, in a fancy restaurant, playing on a real playground and dreaming of being a writer.
I'm learning every day, Rachel, Bourne said in exasperation, as if I could not see the most obvious things. I read and sample and observe every day. It is what I do.
It is what I do. I pointed to the globe of the world, tried one last time.
Can I at least teach you about that?
This caught his interest, and he pulled the globe over, held it up in his muscular tentacles, hoisting it like it was a paper mobile. For the first time, I thought of him as not just strong, but formidable.
This place looks rocky, and I'd like to climb a mountain someday. And then down here are all of these lakes. Can you imagine it, Rachel? So many lakes. We have no lakes here at all. No lakes. I'd like to see a lake. Even a lake as a lark. I'd like to see a lark, too.
He began to excitedly ask specific questions about cities, about countries, about regions. But those places, most all of them, didn't exist anymore with those boundaries. Or those countries had been absorbed by other countries, and then those larger countries had dissolved into anarchy and lawlessness and become smaller cells once again. Most of the cities had burned, in my recollection, were the kinds of places my parents never taught me about, because it cost them too much to do so. Bourne acted as if he'd been trying to solve a problem that had already been solved for us long ago, and I couldn't help him with that. Didn't want to revisit it. Finally, I stopped. I just stopped. The more I tried, the more Bourne was becoming distant, disengaged, and the more I began to be taken aback by his stubborn refusal and, on some level, insulted by it. I had come here to educate Bourne, but if I was honest, I wanted to make sure I stayed close to him. Yet I also wanted Bourne to be normal, to fit in, to be like a normal boy. I wanted this desperately, especially after the events of the past few days. And it struck me, too, that maybe I hadn't kept up. That maybe it wasn't just Bourne's physical growth that had accelerated, but his mental growth, too. That, with no time to adjust, I still saw him as a child. That giant eye. That silly turret. Which led to my surrender. Which led to my next question. What can I do for you then, Bourne? There must be something. No more turret. But once again, the upside-down vase design, the Bourne classic. He contracted so that my stool was pulled closer and closer to the ring of eyes, and his skin was like an electric storm at twilight, with shocks of lightning manifesting as silver cracks in his skin and a mottled darkness of deep, deep green sliding into black, but also a startling glimpse of blue, as of a boat floating over clear water. The smell of him was sickly sweet then, like brandy mixed with crispy waffles lathered in butter and syrup.
There is one thing, Rachel, he said. One thing you said you'd do. Something you promised you would do.
There was a pleading quality to his tone. Yes, I nudged.
You could check the places I can't feel anymore. You could tell me what's happening there?
And I was struck dumb by the depths of my thoughtlessness. So that's what I did. Check the places Bourne couldn't feel anymore. Setting aside my books, shelving my thought of educating Bourne, because it's not what he needed. Doing what I'd promised to do the night the Mord proxy had attacked him. I felt awful. That's the problem with people who are not human. You can't tell how badly they're hurt or how much they need your help. And until you ask, they don't always know how to tell you. What to say about Bourne's body or my inspection of it? He was all the things he could be, rough in places, smooth in others, bumpy and sandpapery in one area, and as worn as river stone in another. The quadrants of Bourne, the logic that held his body together and animated him, had a deep awareness of the tactile, and it was through touch that I began to understand his complexity. The circular tension of the suckers he could create, the waving, stubby toughness of the cilia, which looked so delicate but were not, the utter indestructibility where he formed ridges, the glassy imperviousness of those eyes, which had a film over them that hardened as soon as the eye appeared and left only a millisecond before the eye was subsumed in the skin. Everywhere he felt like one thick muscle with no hint of fat, but also he could be diaphanous in places that spread like fans or webbing. Articulated there, I found patterns that seemed too filigreed and ornamental to have purpose, and yet they did have purpose. With each new unfurling, Bourne was letting me get closer to the heart of him, while he spoke not a word, but let me find the wounds first myself. Nor did he change his scent, left all neutral but the touch of him, and the light. He changed the light so that it streamed from the top of his head like a fountain and sprayed across the ceiling and back down upon us, that I might better see him. Was this what it was like to touch something that no one had ever touched before? Or rarely? Like a blue whale or an elephant? To understand that beyond the seeing eye, the knowing eye, there was such a wealth of unique touch? Such a different way to experience what came across in photos as wondrous enough? I found the defects easily, but kept going to ensure that I missed nothing, that I uncovered each broken place. When I was done, I had discovered 3 hardened areas, a roughness with no give, a stubborn thickness that slashed through areas of rippling motion, paralyzed Bourne's normal functioning. When I had identified them, Bourne confirmed they matched the areas he could not feel, and he changed the color around them to a deep burgundy, which leached the color away from the places where he hurt. This left Bourne almost unbearably white across those sections, a stretch of tentacle, a part of the side of his face, and then another patch far off on the periphery on what I would call a skirt of his flesh. The imprint of Mord Proxy Fang, Mord Proxy Claw, was clear to see there. The mark of Mord, like a brand. Less clear was the nature of the injury. Bourne, now I need you to answer 2 questions. The first is, do you know if that affected flesh is dead? I meant necrotic, but didn't know if he knew the word. And the second is whether there has been a spreading of the numbness since you were bitten. Splayed out like that, fully exposed under the fountain of light, Bourne looked more human than he ever had, for reasons I can't explain. Despite the tentacles spraying out in one direction and the skirt in another and the central column of his presence and also various hunched-over assemblages of flesh under which the cilia writhed, it was in that mode that he felt the most familiar to me, in that moment when I knew him best. The flesh is dead. I receive nothing from it. The numbness spread at first, but I sealed off the dead flesh. I sense no other contamination. Bourne, do you understand the concept of poison? Of being poisoned? Yes, Rachel. Do you know if this substance, the contamination, came into your body when the Mord Proxy bit you? Yes. It was then and no other time. I was alert to environmental contaminants, sealing them out. But I thought a bite was just dead or lost cells. You've been poisoned. I think the moored proxy's fangs or claws or both were coated in something poisonous. As it turned out, I was right, and I had discovered another hazard to take note of in negotiating the world outside. Moored proxies were venomous as snakes. This poison had aided the moored proxies in their fight with the magician's patrol, helped hasten the utter annihilation of the mods and homegrowns. What should I do, Rachel? Am I in trouble? Am I going to die? No, you're not going to die, but you may be in discomfort for a while. If you're like other animals, it will become scar tissue and go away. But infection could occur, so you need to watch them and let me know if those areas change. Infected? Change? Become inflamed? Inflamed? You know, like, see this scab? I extended my forearm. I had gotten the bruises from stumbling on the stairs the night we'd been stuck on the factory rooftop. See how it's red and there's some pus?
Pus. Scab. Pus. Scab. Such not nice words.
Some pus is okay, but not a lot of pus, and you need to clean a wound if there's pus in it, because it means the wound is infected. But you won't die. But keep an eye on it.
Not too much pus, Bourne said.
And three tiny stalks extended near each wound, and three tiny eyes budded from each to keep watch, which, from past experience, meant Bourne was making a little joke about sentry duty. Something like that.
Thanks, Rachel. Thank you.
You're welcome, Bourne. Anytime. I would worry about him now. I would worry about his safety, because I had no control over it anymore, with no guarantee I could keep him safer if I had control anyway. I would worry about his naive sense of trust. I would worry about the gaps, forget to take my books back with me because I believed he still had so much to learn. Before I left, Bourne said,
I can't stop, Rachel.
Can't stop what?
Reading, learning, changing. That's why I don't need your books, Rachel. I'm learning too much too fast already. I feel it filling me up and I can't stop. So when you want me to learn more, it makes me...
Stressed?
Yes, that's the word, stressed. There is stress.
The magician couldn't stop what she was doing. I couldn't stop what I was doing. Wick neither. And now Bourne was telling me he couldn't stop. It's okay, I said, too relieved that I was back in Bourne's good graces to examine what he was saying. It will be fine. I won't force you to learn. But get rid of the dead astronauts.
They're burrowing, but we're in no danger, Bourne replied.
What?
Moored proxies. I can hear them.
I could hear nothing. And no one attacked the balcony cliffs that day, or the next, or the week after. But that didn't mean he hadn't heard them.